morning.
This meeting is now being recorded.
Be started. Thank you. Thank you all for attending, and let's see what we can do to get through this agenda in less time than we have allotted. Let's begin agenda item number one with administration, attendance, etc. We have an indication of who's present in the Adobe room. Can I ask if there are anybody in attendance who is on the phone only and not in the Adobe room? Not hearing any. Let's move on and ask about statements of interest. If there's anybody that has a change update to the statement of interest that they need to make, feel free to do so now. Not hearing any. Let's press on. The next agenda item is just the typical update that we ask of ICANN Legal at the beginning of these calls. ICANN Legal is working in the background with their policy folks at ICANN to put together steps to get us towards picking the standing panel under the new bylaws. So, Liz, if you are back from stepping away, I would ask if you could address that. Are you with us, Liz? Okay. I don't hear that. So I'm going to assume that Liz, who put in the chat that she had to step away for a few minutes, is not back yet. Before we jump into an issue of substance, then I'd like to rejig the agenda just a little bit and address something that I plan to address in any other business at the end of the call. And I'll ask Bernie something in just a minute. And that is, I would like to schedule one more call prior to ICANN 60. And my suggestion would be that if a slot's available, we do so 2 weeks from now. But I also want to state in the backdrop is, it's my hope, and I think we can do this, is that we get the rules and the public comments treatments of the rules done and reported out by the end of the year. We've had a lot of discussion about a number of the rules, not necessarily each and every one, but we are proceeding through that now. And my hope is that between comments on the list and an ability to speak up in the phone calls, we can get that done. And then turn our attention in the new year to the other things that the IRP, IoT, has within its remit. So I would ask first if Bernie could comment on the availability of the time slot 2 weeks from today at the same time of day.
Hi, David. I'm pulling up the schedule right now. 2 weeks from today.
The 19th.
IoT. 19th, 1900 is currently free.
Okay, thanks. If you could pencil us in, Bernie, that would be appreciated.
Done.
And I would note to Brenda that there's a note in the chat from Caboose. He's waiting to be dialed out.
We're trying desperately to get that done. And
thank you so much. Okay, thanks very much. Appreciate it. So we will have one more meeting before ICANN 60, as we just discussed. Thank you for that, Bernie. Moving on to some issues of substance. The joinder issue, I had hoped to get to first reading in the last call. But, and if I could, while I'm setting this up, if I could ask Brenda to put the joinder slide up on the screen. It's one of the slides I sent to you earlier today. I believe it's slide number 2. But I had hoped to get this to first reading in the last call, and then at that time, Sam expressed some concern, and she followed through, as she said she would, with some language with some suggested language after the call, noting her concern, and as a consequence of that, I tried to redraft the joinder treatment that I had suggested. And so I'm going to read it out on the screen, and just in order to give folks a chance to think about it as we go through it. let me pull up my slide to do that. Okay, joinder. Here's what I suggest for joinder language. Number one, that only those persons, entities who participated in the underlying proceeding as a
the host
quote,
has
part,
left the meeting to speak with meeting support and will rejoin soon.
No problem. Let me start that again. That only those persons, entities who participated in the underlying proceeding as a quote party receive notice from a claimant in the IRPs under bylaw section 4.3B3A3 of the full notice of IRP and request for IRP, including copies of all related filed documents contemporaneously with the claimant serving those documents on ICANN. Number two, and this is the paragraph that contains some new language that's indicated in red, that subject to the following sentence, all such parties have a right to intervene in the IRP. Notwithstanding the foregoing, a person or entity seeking to intervene in an IRP can only be granted party, quote, party status if that person or entity demonstrates that it meets the standing requirements to be a claimant under the IRP at section 4.3B of the ICANN bylaws and as defined within the supplemental procedures. The timing and other aspects of intervention shall be managed pursuant to the applicable rules of arbitration of the ICDR, except as otherwise indicated here. Subject to the preceding provisions in this paragraph, the manner in which this limited intervention right shall be exercised shall be up to the procedures officer, who may allow such intervention through granting IRP party status or by allowing such parties to file amicus briefs as the procedures officer determines in his or her discretion. An intervening party shall be subject to applicable costs, fees, expenses, and deposits provisions of the IRP as determined by the ICDR. An amicus may be subject to applicable costs, fees, expenses, and deposit provisions of the IRP as deemed reasonable by the procedures officer. I'm just going to take a pause there for a second. Okay. I just wanted to see if there was anything in the chat. Moving on, next two paragraphs. Number three, no interim relief that would materially affect an interest of any such amicus to an IRP can be made without allowing such amicus an opportunity to be heard on the requested relief in a manner as determined by the procedures officer. And number four, in handling all matters of intervention and without limitation to other obligations under the bylaws, the procedures officer shall endeavor to adhere to the provisions of bylaw section 4.3S to the extent possible while maintaining fundamental fairness. And that concludes the reading of the suggested language. 4.3S deals with expediting or trying to handle expeditious IRPs. So with all of that on the table and as an attempt to take account of Sam's concern, I have two questions. One, does anybody want to make a comment or concern? Otherwise, I will consider this going forward for first reading. I'll put it out on the list, but as I typically do for a couple extra days. And two, Liz, are you back with us on the phone? Those are the two questions. So, Liz, if you're here, you can speak up now.
Hi, David. It's Liz. I'm back on the phone.
Thank you. So let me invert those questions a little bit. Liz, since you're on the phone, do you have any concerns with this attempt to take account of what Sam put on the list?
No, not as to this.
Okay.
I do want to talk about it when we get to discussing the suggestion that Malcolm noted on list.
I was just going to mention Malcolm's. Before I do that, is there anyone else? I don't see any hands, and I haven't heard it, so I'm assuming that we can move forward. Liz, why don't you go ahead and speak to what your I'll ask you this, Liz, and then I'll go to Caboose. Why don't you speak to what you were going to say about Malcolm's intervention on the list?
Thanks, David. Well, I don't think that ICANN actually have any objections to, in theory, to what Malcolm has proposed, but what we would like to see is proposed language that captures his position.
Thank you. Basically, my reaction as a participant is the same as yours, and I was going to try and capture some language after this discussion. Before I go any further, Caboose, your hand is up, so you have the floor.
Yes, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Just very, very small point. Why in two areas we have the uppercase? Is it to indicate that this is something new? Usually in any text we don't have uppercase. Sometimes we might have an exceptional case, something with bold, but in uppercase, just a clarification. And importantly, in number four, why we say shall endeavor? Because whenever we are not sure that somebody should do something in an obligatory or mandatory with shall, sometimes we try to soften that by saying that shall endeavor. That means it may not do that, but it try to do that. So is it a reason that you say shall endeavor to adhere, or it shall adhere, or it should adhere? So shall endeavor is something between should endeavor and shall endeavor. Is that the intention? Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. And as the one who drafted this language, there are several instances of uppercase. Uppercase references to IRP, to ICDR, and to procedures officer. The IRP and the ICDR, frankly, I believe I just capitalized those because they are institutions and it seems like a normal thing to do. But procedures officer is capitalized because it's a defined term in the rules. As I recall, I believe it was capitalized in the rules. I will double check that, and there's no particular reason for it to be capitalized. So in the next iteration, I may lowercase that one, but leave ICDR and IRP uppercase. Does that address that issue?
Yes. And now for the second issue, why shall endeavor?
Right.
Yeah.
The second issue is, my thought on it was that there's no guarantee that in handling a matter of intervention, it will be as timely as if there was no intervention. And so it was giving a little bit of leeway to the procedures officer. It was basically, my thought was, stating 4.S as a standard not to be forgotten. That's really what the intent of this is, and not to allow the fact of intervention to let 4.3S become an afterthought. And that was my attempt to capture that. I'm happy to look at alternative language, and I'm open to any suggestion, but that's really the thought behind that. So my question now becomes, Caboose, do you have further comment?
Yeah, no, on this comment on shall endeavor or should endeavor or shall adhere, I think I suggest that you take either the upper level or lower level, either should adhere or shall adhere, but not shall endeavor to adhere. That is my suggestion, unless
okay,
there is a real valid reason between the endeavor. Yeah.
Thanks, Caboose. I've given you my thoughts. Let me, I'm going to put this back out on the list following this phone call in a request for first reading, to confirm first reading. So let me take that and think about it and take a look again at 4.3S. I think if I may separately email you in the meantime. But that is, so thank you for that. Any other comments on this joinder issue? If not, why don't we move forward to the next slide, Brenda, and that's ongoing monitoring. And I will, I will go ahead and look at my slide, and I'll read through this, too. And let me just set this up with a little bit of background, and that is the ongoing monitoring request isn't really a rule. It has to do, and it won't show up in our treatment of the rules. It's really a request from the ALAC that we, as the IRP team, come up with a device for some kind of a formal periodic review of the IRP. It's an excellent idea. And it was already in the bylaws in some form, but this we're going to tweak it a little bit based on the ALAC's input. And so I think you all may remember that I had made a suggestion, and Aubrey took the lead on this. Thank you, Aubrey. And Aubrey made a suggestion, I should put. I put that in correctly. And I had made some suggested tweaks to that, and Aubrey was a little bit concerned that I had that it wasn't as slight as I had said. And so then I have attempted to try and find the middle ground between what Aubrey and I were both saying. And so I came up with what you now see on the screen. Let me just read it. This is how we would treat the idea of ongoing monitoring of the IRP. After the IOT finishes its current work items as indicated in bylaw section 4.3, it terminates as implied in that section. Next bullet. Section 4.3N needs to be amended to remove section I once the IOT is terminated. And third bullet, the review of the IRP under bylaw section 4.6B2F shall be made mandatory rather than discretionary, and shall be amended to include participation in such review by a representative of the IRP standing panel. That's sort of sliced and diced to try and meet the concerns that both Aubrey and I had. So, Cavus, this hand is up first, and then I'll turn to Aubrey. Cavus, go ahead.
Yes. First, let us deal with what you have on the screen. I see again that the last portion, and shall be amended, is in capitalized. It's still the same issue that you capitalize that, because you can capitalize a name, you can capitalize an entity, but capitalize a sentence is not very usual, and shall be amended to include participation and so on and so forth. Is there any particular reason that a sentence or part of the sentence is totally capitalized? And then I have to go back to the number four, that I, again, once you dealt with this issue. First of all, why the whole, the part of the paragraph is capitalized? Thank you.
On the capitalization, my recollection here is that I was concerned that the use of color in the email that I was responding to an email wouldn't capture the change, and so I, if I'm not mistaken, I believe I just used capital letters to indicate changed language, and that's all it is. There's no magic to it, and I'm happy to move that to lowercase going forward when I put it back on list.
Yes, and on the first one, that is number four, that you dealt with shall endeavor, I think you put shall endeavor, one qualification, and then at the end of the sentence, you say to the extent possible. It is too weak. Either you retain the and to the extent possible and remove endeavor, or you put shall endeavor and remove to the extent possible. So not two times qualification, not two times weakening the adherence to the situation. So that is my point, and I don't think that you need to send me an email, because I am part of the group, and we have to discuss at the level of group. It is not me to be convinced. It's the whole group to be convinced. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. Fair points. Aubrey, you're up.
Thank you. Aubrey speaking. First of all, I wanted to apologize for not getting back to you when you did ask me about the wording earlier in the week, because it was done in the header with the little IOT in the brackets. It got filed with the rest of the IOT group mail, which I only reviewed this morning in preparation for today's meeting. So sorry I didn't get back to you to say what I'm going to say much earlier, even though you gave me an opportunity to do so. I appreciate the effort to try and find a middle space. I think that's always a good idea. And I think including a representative, now one of the things that we may want to differentiate is whether they're participating as member or whether they're one of those experts that the group invites, and whether they're participating just on this issue or as a general expert within the context of the group. So that needs to be clarified. The other thing that concerns me has to do still with the use of the ATR key. One, I mean, we still haven't quite overcome all the issues that say the ATR key is perhaps already overloaded. But there's another issue, which is the topics that a particular ATR key takes up at a review. I think in every other topic, it's really at their discretion what they include in their agenda. So now I haven't gone back to the bylaws to make sure, but I think that saying, and there's this one topic that they must do, and they must do it at every review. And I think that may be a bigger change to the ATRT way of doing things, the ATRT mandate, than is perhaps comfortable for everyone. If indeed I am right, and it does change the nature of the ATRT to actually have a commandment as opposed to a set of issues they are supposed to consider and figure out what they're going to do within their 1 year of work. So that's my concern. I think it's good that there be someone there from the standing panel, but I'd be curious about what I asked in the beginning. What is their role? Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. Good points. With respect to the ATRT, and I don't have the bylaws up in front of me, but I believe that the current treatment is to have them under the ATRT, but it's not mandatory, it's discretionary. And then you actually suggested language at one point, and I frankly am not very, very hung up between the version you originally suggested and this one, and the one I suggested. So could I ask you to, if you could return to what you originally suggested and maybe put that back on the list, and give some, my understanding of the participation by the panel is that a member of the panel, probably the chair, would be able to participate as a full member of the group. But if I could ask you to go back and resubmit your original proposal in which you floated.
Okay, yeah. In the original proposal, I had it not under the ATRT, but I had it following the format that we were supposed to be doing this original one under, was working with them. But sure, I can look at it. But really, we do have a fundamental difference of putting it in under the ATRT. And at this point, I'm willing to surrender on that. Sure, give it to the ATRT, but I do worry about forcing the ATRT's hand on what they will review during a particular year. But I'll go back and take another look at the language. As I say, apologize that I didn't do it during the intervening week when you had asked, but I just didn't see the message.
Well, that's okay. Thanks, Aubrey. And I think, though, if I'm not mistaken, it is currently under ATRT in a discretionary fashion. It's not a mandatory review for them to do. And so if we come up with a recommendation that's not implemented, that will remain. That's in the bylaws now. And I think your proposal was to, in fact, to create a new section taking it out of ATRT. And I'm fine with that too. So as you go back and look at your original suggestion, I think I'll be fine with it. I haven't heard anybody else object to it. So I have a feeling that what you next suggest will be what we send through for first reading. But if you could take that look and put it back on list, let's give us a chance to move it forward that way.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So if anyone has a comment on this, on what we just discussed, please weigh in now. Otherwise, we will move on in the agenda. The next one is translation and interpretation. I put an email on the list about this. I don't have a slide for it, unfortunately, but I do intend to discuss it, and I can read through the operative parts. And I'm hoping that everybody got a chance to take a look at my email of Monday, September the 25th on this. Basically, what happened is the governments of Switzerland and Spain weighed in, supported by one or two other parties. Spain was basically saying that interpretation services should be free if requested by a claimant. Documents in English should be accompanied by translations if requested by the claimant, and the IRP time periods would be adjusted accordingly from when the translations are available. Switzerland was something like that, but it wasn't based on request. It was based on need. And so talked in terms of translation being required. And then I, in my mail, specified the treatment that's given to translations under the ICDR rules. And then I got to a recommendation and discussion. And for those who can't weigh in now, I would urge you to go back and revisit my mail. It was September the 25th. But what I said in my recommendation is that I agreed with the idea that we should be using the concept of need. Thanks very much for putting that on the screen, Brenda. I said I very much support the idea of need rather than request for being the touchstone that we would look to with respect to translation services. And let me interrupt for just a moment, and I see Caboose's hand is up, so I'm going to give the floor to Caboose in case it is germane to anything I just said. Caboose, go ahead. If you're speaking, Caboose, we can't hear you.
I said that please kindly consider my earlier suggestion in the number 4, either delete endeavor and retain to the extent possible, or retain endeavor and delete to the extent possible, but not have both of them, number 1. Number 2, with respect to translation, I have no problem because I am not involved in that. Our language, unfortunately, is not among the language to be translated. But whenever we have this translation, this is always a critical issue. And some of the countries like X and Y immediately comes for political reasons, but not for any other reasons. But I have even no problem with that. But language interpretation requires cost. So have you considered the cost? It depends the length of the document. 1 page, 2 pages doesn't matter. But it's a lengthy document. The translation in 6 languages or 7 or 8 languages is costly. I don't know how much cost for ICANN, but I have information for other organizations that 1 page is 300 Swiss francs or $320. I don't have others from others. But we have to consider that the length of the document and how it is. If it is a summary, yes, but if it's a lengthy document, perhaps we should consider whether the cost could be borne or not. That is the question, but I have no problem with interpretation because it is a very sensitive issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I'm sorry for not addressing the endeavor comment that you made previously, and I take your point that it was essentially being mentioned twice. I will look at that and not mention it twice. So either endeavor or whatever it was, and the other language was to the extent feasible or whatever. I take your point, and I will look at making an adjustment there. With respect to translation, I take your point, Caboose, about certain documents may not need to be in a sense, but let me just finish sort of setting this up, and then I'll address that. And what I was saying is I think that the standard should be a need, a requirement. Remember that the ICANN, the new ICANN bylaw 4.3L, provides that translation services for claimants will be available if needed. And obviously, that's the word that they use too, need. And so I think we should stick with that. I also offered some observations that be- because I can use the 6 official UN languages, we should take account of that. And so if a claimant or someone seeking translation services speaks one of those 6 languages as well as another language that they want a translation into, that the translation need not be provided. In other words, the concept of need would take account of the languages that the claimant speaks and reads. If it's if they speak English as a second language, then that's fine. If they speak one of the 6, Arabic, Chinese, English, French, Russian, or Spanish, as a second language, then that's fine. In other words, it's not simply giving a translation because someone thinks it's convenient. That, I think the rule should get to that point, to make that point that the panel not exercise anything like that. And if the claimant is a company and somebody in the company speaks English or Russian or Spanish, then a translation would not be needed. You know, somebody at the officer level, director level, that kind of thing. So I was asking that Sidley incorporate these kind of changes, and that's where I think this proposal is going. Caboose's point raises an interesting one, and that is, what about documents that are 120 pages? And so I think it raises the idea of introducing the element of fairness here. Now, I did note in setting this up that the ICDR Rule 5 says that it's, you know, supposed to be an expedited hearing, and the IRP panel shall consider accessibility, fairness, and efficiency, both as to time and cost, in the conduct of the IRP. And so my guess is, or my hope is, that that would give the panel the discretion to rule on such instances as Caboose raised, but it might be worth noting. Caboose, I see your hand. Is that a new hand?
Yes, because I'm dealing with this issue for many, many, many years. I have some experience in that. I don't think that if the claimant is speaking, do you hear me?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, if the claimant speaks Arabic and the initial document is English, that claimant could ask translation in Arabic. But why should it be translated in Chinese? Because the claimant does not speak Chinese. Why should it be Chinese? Sorry to pick a particular language. Or why should it be in Russian? I think we should put some sort of the qualifications that in additional language than initial or original, if requested, in one additional language, if requested, but not automatic translation in 6 languages. It would be very costly. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Those are good points. I thought that was implicitly part of this, but you're making a very good point. It should be explicit. So, good point. Thank you. So, that would be my suggestion for treating the language issue, language and translation. And I would propose that I put this on lists seeking a first reading, you know, within the next week, something like that. But if anyone has thoughts in addition to Caboose's, please speak up and make them now. And seeing or hearing none, and okay, I'm going to move on then. So we just did translation interpretation. I had on the agenda payment of fees, and it's in response to a note from the IPC. But to be honest with you, I've not had the time this week to tee this one up sufficiently. I tried to last time, and I have some information about it, but I would prefer that I take this out to list to set this up, and we address it in our next call. If I broached it now, it would be haphazard and would probably not help us. Having said that, since I have it on the agenda, if anyone here would like to comment on the IPC's comment about payment of fees, et cetera, I'm certainly willing or certainly happy to hear that now. And so I'll call for hands or a voice, anything like that. Seeing none,
so
hearing
what
none.
What is IPC point? Yeah, what is IPC point? Could you refresh at least my mind? I am sorry I have not followed that. What is the IPC point? Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. And I'll bring it up on list. But basically, the IPC asked that there be language included in the rules to the effect that nothing in the new rules is intended to supersede some ICDR rules. And those were rules that dealt with allocating costs from a party's being dilatory, delaying things, or otherwise. And so there, it was just a request for clarity, as I understand. Greg is on the call, and if Greg, if you have anything to offer or shed any light, I may have botched that refreshment of ideas, but I'd be happy to hear it. Otherwise, Caboose, I would be I'll put something on the list. Greg, is that you coming on the line? I take it not. So, Caboose, that's roughly what it was about. And not having any other hands, let's move on to the first treatment of evidence, discovery, evidence, statements. And this is something I put in the slide that I mailed just prior to the call and that Brenda can throw up on the screen. And it came out under an email that I put out several days ago. But there were requests, various requests from members from the public comments about certain evidentiary issues, statements, and things like that. And after considering all of them, I came up with the idea that we should make an addition to Rule 6. The rules that actually apply here are Rule 6 and Rule 8, but I recommended that we make a change to Rule 6. I'll read out the language of Rule 6, then the last sentence is what I'm suggesting that we add. The initial written submissions of the parties shall not exceed 25 pages each in argument, double-spaced and in 12-point font. All necessary and available evidence in support of the claimant's claims should be part of the initial written submission. Evidence will not be included when calculating the page limit. The parties may submit expert evidence in writing, and there shall be one right of reply to that expert evidence. The IRP panel may request additional written submissions from the party seeking review, the board, the supporting organizations, or from other parties. I'll now begin that last sentence that I suggest we add. In addition, the IRP panel may grant a request for additional written submissions from the party seeking review, the board, the supporting organizations, or from other parties upon the showing of a compelling basis for such request. And that's what I did in response to the comments about there should be additional chance to submit evidence. But then I also went on and dealt with some of the other requests in which I said this. Otherwise, with respect to Rule 8 discovery methods, I recommend no change. That's me, David McCauley, speaking as a participant. The rule directs the panel to be guided by considerations of accessibility, fairness, and efficiency, both as to time and cost, in considering discovery requests. This leaves the matter to the panel where it will be better handled than by us trying to imagine a context to fix. I also note that ICDR Article 21 states that depositions, interrogatories, and requests to admit are not appropriate for these arbitrations. Article 21.5 deals with exchanging confidential information. We should keep in mind that the IRP is not just for U.S. lawyers and is meant to be streamlined and efficient. Those were my words. So that's my suggested treatment for a number of comments. For instance, you see I cited Article 21.5, confidential treatment. That's in response to a comment from the International Trademark Association. I mentioned that Article 21 of the ICDR deals with depositions, interrogatories, and requests to admit, saying they're not appropriate. And that's in response to a number of people that said we should have provisions for depositions, interrogatories, and et cetera. So that's my suggestion, and I'd like to move it to first reading on the list, but here is an opportunity for folks to weigh in who are on the call, tweak it, comment, suggest something else, as you wish. Liz, you have a hand up.
Thanks, David. I think with respect to the proposed sentence that you have in red, our concern is with the reference to allowing the panel to seek written submissions from the board or supporting organizations or other parties, it would kind of maybe circumventing the joiner intervention rule. So as a way around, and it doesn't tie it to the requirements that of what a party has to meet in order to intervene on as under the joiner rule.
Thanks, Liz. Excuse me. If I'm not mistaken, the sentence just prior to that that says the IRP panel may request additional written submissions from the party seeking review, the board, the supporting or that language before the red sentence is actually in the rule that we came up with, as I recall. Does that make a difference to what you're saying, or how does that factor in?
So I apologize. I wasn't part of the group when we came up with this initial language. So I was focusing on the new language, the red. I see what you're saying. I guess to your point, I guess the IRP panel can request to the first part. Our IRP panel can request written submissions from whoever they want, but I think other entities shouldn't be able to ask to be able to submit to additional submissions unless they are a party or they qualify as an amicus to the claim, to the IRP.
Okay, that's a fair point. So maybe a tweak to this would be, you know, if qualified or something like, if qualified under the rules.
Yeah, I mean, if we can tie it back to perhaps like under the rule and tie it back to the joiner rule or in some way reference that back and any other sections that might be applicable, then I think that that language would be okay.
So then let me ask you to do that, Liz, if you would submit that language to the list. But when you do it, let me ask you to take a look at Rule 6 in the current draft that was out for public comment, because those entities that are listed there, the boards, the SOs, other parties, et cetera, those are in the rule in the preceding sentence. So just take a look and keep that in mind as you make a suggestion on the list.
Absolutely. We'll do that.
Okay, thanks. Caboose, your hands up.
Yes, I have 2 points to make. First of all, partly I agree with the previous speaker that we need to inject some words in the red part, such as with justification or if justified. So in addition, the IRP panel may grant, comma, if justified, a request and so on and so forth. We need to have a justification, but not a request and give it a full blank check to the panel to grant the additional submissions, so on. This is number one. We need to add something, if justified. So we need to put that on. Second, the main submission is 25 pages. I have no problem. This is all taken from American standards, 25, double space, 12 font. I have no problem with anything. But there is a but. The main is 25 pages, but additional, how many pages you should go? 50? 100? And what? So we should put some limits here as well, the additional submissions. So we should not be more than is required. So we should have not exceeding, and you have to discuss what figure you put. I think should not be 25% more than the initial one, about 5 to 6 pages, but not the additional pages or additional submissions more than the existing or more than the initial one. So we have to address this issue. Otherwise, it may create some problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. So, Liz, I would suggest you capture some of that language that Caboose just mentioned with respect to, justification, et cetera, when you offer language on lists, see if that might work into it. And then secondly, with respect, I understand the point about a cap. This language appears in the rule, I believe. Let me just take a real quick look at Rule 6. Caboose, let me think about what you said about capping the additional submission. Part of why I'm hesitating is it's likely that someone is coming to the panel and saying, I can't state my case in 25 pages. I need additional room. And there's an assumption in here that the panel is going to be exercising appropriate oversight. So before we put a cap, let me think if I can find a way to word that says the panel can approve that, but only in compelling circumstances or something like that. And let me see what I can come up with. And then if it's not satisfactory, you can comment then on the list. But I guess what I'm saying is I don't know what to say right now. Let me try and work on it. Caboose, your hand's back up.
Yes, David, you are expert in U.S. Law. I am not. But you have seen that this 25 pages does not come from nowhere. It comes from somewhere. So I don't think that somebody could come to the panel saying that 25 pages is not sufficient for me to explain. I think they should accommodate his views in the 25-page, concise, precise, and so on and so forth, not write a book. So this 25 has some basis. And then it might be particular cases that some additional pages will be required or maybe admitted on certain cases, justifications, but it should have a cap. So I don't think that we should leave it open, and I have no problem to leave it to you to think it over, look at any precedents anywhere, in any court, in any circumstances. I have no difficulty, but not to be open as it is now. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I will take it under advisement and see what I can come up with. I do note your very kind observation that I'm an expert in U.S. law. Unfortunately, I wish that were the case. I'm not sure any such person exists, but thank you. So
this is what Thomas said. This is what Thomas Ficker said. You're expert in U.S. law.
I noticed it when Thomas said it, and I will have to have a chat with Thomas. But thank you very much. Thank you. Does anybody else want to weigh in on this issue? And if not, you can look for treatment on the list, but I'm going to be in the list and on the call saying, let's get this to first reading, and I hope then second reading will be fairly easy beyond that. So I've talked about my inability to deal with payment of fees right now, so that brings us to the end of the agenda to any other business. And I'm very happy that Bernie could accommodate us to get some time. I'm hoping we can get another. This is a nice turnout. Thank you all very much. If there's any way you can help the process of, getting these rules moving, certainly would be appreciated. There's a couple, I think, left for the sign-up sheet. But in any event, I want to thank folks. I have no other business myself, but I'm opening the floor if anybody wants to bring up anything else right now. Seeing no hands and hearing nothing, I will then simply say thank you to all for your participation on the call today, and that will wind up the call, and that's the end. We'll see you next time and on the list. Thanks very much.